going to take a little deviation from what Pastor's been talking about the last few weeks and talk about the book of Joshua, chapter 3. So, when a child takes their first steps, what are some of the things that they have to learn to do? A child will have to learn to stand on 2 feet, to balance on 2 feet instead of on all fours. They'll have to learn how to stand on 1 foot and then to fall forward just enough so that they can catch themselves on that foot and then propel themselves forward and to a free fall and catch themselves with that first foot again. It's something that we take for granted, as a very simple task, because it's something that most people do every day, whether it's walking a couple of miles, walking around at work, or for some people, walking from the couch to the refrigerator and back. We find it quite simple, but it's so difficult for a young mind to learn, especially for a young mind that's still trying to figure out how all of its arms and legs work. However, once they have achieved the art of walking on 2 legs, then the result is very rewarding. Namely, they get to cause more chaos by moving twice as fast and using half as much energy. But how does this relate to us? I'd like to relate this to a quote from the founder and first general of the Salvation Army. I don't know where my quote went, but Mr. William Booth said this: "Faith and works should travel side by side, step answering to step, like the legs of men walking. First faith, and then works, and then faith again, and then works again, until they can scarcely distinguish which is one and which is the other." And Joshua chapter 3 really expresses this idea. The Israelites are just about to cross the Jordan River and enter the promised land since the first time, since their defeat in Numbers chapter 14, before the 40 years of wandering. The Israelites display that godly faith and action bring God's results. Godly faith and action bring God's results. Now, you may be asking yourself how the Israelites show this relationship between faith and works in their crossing of the Jordan. Now, there are 3 elements in the passage that I want to point out. 3 elements that I have alliterated for your convenience and remembering abilities. The first element I pulled from verses 1 through 5, a section that is all about the people. Come on, just one slide at a time, please. So in Joshua chapter 3, it says, "Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Shittim. And they came to the Jordan, he and all the people of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, 'As soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, your God, being carried by the Levitical priests, then you shall set out from your place and follow it. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it, about 2,000 cubits in length. Do not come near it, in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before.' Then Joshua said to the people, 'Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you.'" So at this stage in their history, the people of Israel were in one of their closer times with the Lord. And the older, wicked generation who had failed to do what God had said by entering the promised land had all died in the wilderness, save for Caleb and Joshua. There were no idols to be found among the Israelites. There were no Asherah poles or golden calves that would hinder their relationship with God. These people are how God has always wanted his people to be like. They were obedient, worshipful, and faithful. And to these people, God had 2 commands. They had to, A, follow the Ark of the Covenant when it set out from camp the next day, and they had to consecrate themselves. Now, the first task was pretty simple. When the Ark set out the next day, the Israelites had to follow it, although a little ways back. Since 2 cubits is about a yard, 2,000 cubits is about 1,000 yards. It's really easy math. But from this distance, they had to follow the Ark to the Jordan River. They were to follow the Ark, which symbolized God's presence among the nation of Israel as they traveled that final leg of their journey into the Promised Land. In essence, they were following the Lord as he showed them the way to the promised land, as he had showed Abraham the way to the promised land hundreds of years earlier. They followed the ark because they had faith that God would do what he said he would do. They believed that he would do great things as Joshua had told them. The second task that God gave the Israelites was a fairly simple task, but it had a little bit more meaning behind it. Biblically, consecration carries the idea of separating yourself from things that would be unclean, things that would separating yourself from things that would hinder your relationship with God. They were supposed to separate themselves from anything that would make them unclean, be it physical or spiritual. The Israelites would be required in this to bathe, which sounds like a strange thing for God to have to tell them to do. And it would sound strange for good reason. Here in Michigan, we are surrounded by some of the largest lakes in the world, so water is fairly plentiful for us. Not so to a desert nomad people 3,500 years ago. They would have had enough water to live off of, but when deciding how to use that water that they found, hygiene was pretty low on the priorities list. So as a result, they bathed very rarely. So for the purposes of consecration, it would serve as an external sign of what would happen within. It would be a removal of that which tainted their relationship with the Lord. It was a recommittal of oneself to obey God and to do his will. I heard a story about a pilot who was newly licensed, and he was flying his plane, his private plane, on a cloudy day. He was not yet experienced in how to land a plane with just the instruments and not being able to see anything. So when the time came for the control tower to bring him in for a landing, he started to panic a little bit. You know, he was like, no, I've never really done this before. I've never really landed the plane with just the instruments. I can't see anything. But then a stern voice came over the radio. You just obey the instructions. We'll take care of the obstructions. The Israelites were to be just like that pilot. They were to recommit themselves to obeying God, the one who had their best interest in mind, just like that control tower. The Israelites showed their faith once again through their actions, and once again, their faith was shown to be a true, godly faith by following the commands that God gave them. They believed that godly faith and action bring godly results. They put their money where their mouth was and had a godly faith which was demonstrated through their obedience to God's commands. The same is true for us today. When we obey the commands that God has given us in his word, then we demonstrate our faith in him and our belief that he is God, the maker and ruler of all. The second element of the passage comes from verses 6 through 13. And in the passage there, is, if you could read with me, where it says, "And Joshua said to the priests, 'Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on before the people.' So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. The Lord said to Joshua, 'Today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, so that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, when you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan.' And Joshua said to the people of Israel, 'Come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God.' And Joshua said, 'Here is how you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is passing before you into the Jordan. Now therefore take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each tribe a man. And when the soles of the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off from flowing, and the waters coming down from above shall stand in one heap." So the second element that I found of faith in this passage is the priests. Now, the priests had a faith that was embodied when they stepped out into that river. The Jordan River was flooded at the time. Later in the passage, it says that the banks were overflowed. The main river that connects the Sea of Galilee to the lowest point on the planet, the Dead Sea, was in flood season, where so much water was moving downstream that the water went up over the bank and flooded the surrounding area. When studying this out, I realized I'd never really looked up a picture of the Jordan River and didn't really know what it looked like. But I had always imagined it to be a large river. I mean, the last time that God parted a body of water for the Israelites, it was the Red Sea. So obviously this must also be a very large or rough body river in order to warrant for God's divine intervention. So if you, like me, have never seen the Jordan River or pictures of the Jordan River, then I present to you the rushing, wild Jordan River. At first I thought I had the wrong river. I mean, this is not what I was expecting when I looked for pictures of the Jordan. If you were to visit the Jordan River today, though, this is more likely what you would find. And that doesn't look like it would take a whole lot of faith for anyone to step out into it. To stop that flow would be miraculous for sure. It's not like it's a tiny little creek, but stepping out in faith into the river wouldn't take a whole lot of faith for a person. So I was expecting something a little bit bigger. After a little bit more digging, I found that the reason that the Jordan River is so small in these, like in the current day, is because 98% of it is diverted by Israel, Jordan, and Syria for irrigation purposes. And that is the remaining 2-3% of the river that lazily kind of wallows its way down to the Dead Sea. A more accurate representation of what the Jordan would have looked like comes from a flood of the Jordan in 1935. So that year, the Jordan flooded, like, big time. A whopping 1.3 billion cubic meters of water came through, came down the Jordan to the Red Sea that year. And it looked a little bit something like that. This is what those priests were stepping into. This is what the priests holding the ark and all of Israel were trying to cross. Now, there's a little bridge there on the left side you can see. That bridge is normally about 30 feet above the water. And in that picture, the water has come up to the bottom of it. So they were probably trying to cross this river, which was probably about 30 to 40 feet deep, and carrying all of the gold and bronze tabernacle pieces, along with having all of the women, children, and animals, there was no way that they were swimming across that thing. They had no choice but to rely on God, and that's what those priests proved to do. Stepping out into the unknown, murky river with that 200-pound box that they called the ark on their shoulders. They stepped out in faith and saw the results of it. Now, while I was at Bible college the last couple of years, I talked to several people who were planning on staying for all 3 years that Frontier offers for courses. But they didn't know what they were going to do after that. People who didn't know what God had in store for their lives and didn't really know where to start either. When I first started, I mean, I didn't know the answer to that either. But it has all come all the more clearer to me that you have to step out and give God opportunities to work. My second year, I turned in an application for RBM Ministries. I didn't know a whole lot about them then. But I thought it was an interesting mission, and recalling all the time that I had spent in the release time Bible classes, I decided to put in an application. God took that application, and he just started to throw open doors left, right, and center. God took that step that I took in faith and showed his mighty hand just like he did to the priest who crossed that river. They showed that godly faith and action bring God's results. They stepped into the unknown and as a result got front row seats for a miracle that God worked for Israel. They got to see how God worked firsthand. When we step out in faith, when we take that first step into opportunities that God sets before us, God can take them and do amazing things. You can go on a mission trip, like many of, I think it's 16 people who are going from this church to go to Ecuador in a couple of weeks. So props to them. I commend them greatly, because God can take a mission trip like that and use that to, as a first step to bring someone into a full-time career in missions. However, more than that, you could substitute as a Sunday school teacher, and God can open up doors in that, and you could find that you really enjoy it. When you take a step like that in faith, a first step, God may open another door, and another door, and another door, none of which would have happened if you hadn't taken that first step. Just like how they say, that old saying, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. Just like those priests, who would have not had the door opened across the Jordan had they not taken that first step in faith. Now, the third element of the story that I found comes from the final four verses of the chapter, where God shows his power and his might to those who are faithful to him. Now, after the faith that we saw demonstrated through the people and the priests, we see the product. So starting in verse 14, we read, "So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped into the brink of the river," now the Jordan overflows all of its banks throughout the time of the harvest, "the waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan. And those flowing down toward the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off. Now the people passed over opposite Jericho. Now the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan." The faith of the people and the priests paid off. They weren't disappointed. God showed up in a big way. That river that we saw, not only did it stop flowing as soon as the priest's feet hit the water, but verse 16 said it piled up near the city of Adam, which is about there. So the red dot on top is where the city of Adam is, and the red dot on top, the bottom is the nearest part of the river to Jericho, where the chapter says they crossed at. According to my crude calculations, that is a distance of 15 miles that God backed up the water for them. And here we see all the more reason why we can have faith in God. When God decides to show his power, he does it on a grand scale. All that water drained away as the priest walked out onto the dry riverbed, each step an action based off of faith. As they reached the middle of the river, the children of Israel crossed over. Millions of men, women, and children, and animals crossing not just to the other side of the river, but beyond where the floodwaters would reach them, all on dry ground. While the priests with the ark stood in the river, showing the entire assembly that God was the one holding back the water, not any of these pagan gods that they were about to conquer in the land of Canaan. The faith of the people of and the priests was shown to be true through the actions of the nation. They did as God commanded, and as a result, God showed up. They saw that godly faith and action bring God's results. Now, I've said that a lot up to this point, and I haven't really touched one part of the phrase, the fact that it brings God's results, that God's results are brought. Just because you take a step in faith doesn't mean that God will do what you want. Not every body of water that the Israelites crossed and they're taking of the land just split in the middle for them so they could run across on dry ground. God is not some trained puppy who will do what you ask if you faithfully believe he will do it. God will do what he wills when he wills to do it. He will do his will, which is what is best for us. One of my teachers at Frontier learned this the hard way while he was in college. My teacher did not have a car at the time, when he was young and in college, and one day he saw an advertisement for a drawing where one person who entered in this drawing would win this brand new shiny car. So my teacher entered the drawing and had faith that God would provide him with this car. And for the next couple of weeks, that's what he was telling all of his friends. He was like, I am going to get this car, but was a little scant on the details of how he was going to get the car. So days went by, and then weeks, and then months. To this day, the man is over 80 years old, and he still hasn't gotten that car. It's clear that although my teacher had all the faith that God would not give him this new car, that car went to someone else, and my teacher had to settle with a car that was in God's will, something that was no doubt much older, but something that ran well for all intents and purposes that he would have needed it for. In Joshua 3, God asks the Israelites to faithfully and obediently follow him and step out in faith. When they did these two things, they were abiding with God, and God gave them the desires of their heart. Their desire, of course, being that the will of God would be done. Not the things that they may want, which would not have fulfilled his purposes, but the things that God willed, which would bring the most glory to himself. Even today, God does what he wills, and his will is what's best for us. So we can see that even with every problem that we may face, every health problem, every disastrous event, every closed door, God has our best intent, our best interest at heart, and only desires that we step forward in faith. Let's pray. Lord, I just pray that that you would have us to remember that that with faith, a step of faith comes a step of works as well, Lord, and that the only true faith, that only true faith in works will bring about your will, Lord. And I just pray all these things in your name.